Little Foxes by Michael Morpurgo. Chapter 9. The terrier came straight to the hole and would have come in after them had not Billy hurled a clod of earth and stones at his snarling snout. It took a broadside to drive him away, and he backed off, yelping in surprise. Billy crouched in the dark with the fox breathing heavily against him, and they heard the hunters' voices as they toiled up the hillside towards the dog that stood quivering and barking at the bottom of the crater. "Ain't no deer down there, you and your deer, Jack. Run me ruddy legs off, I did. And for what?" said one of them. "Rabbits, that's all. There's in there. Come all this way for a ruddy rabbit we did. Lost the scent, didn't he? Useless mutt." "He's after something, though, isn't he?" said another voice. "There's a hole down there, see? Big enough for a fox, that is. Perhaps it was a fox, after all. Perhaps he's after a fox. Let's put him in there and see, eh? We came all this way, didn't we? Worth a try." And Billy heard them slithering down the crater. He grabbed the biggest stone he could find from the floor of the cave and watched for the terrier's nose to appear again. But instead of the dog, it was a face they saw, a woolly head of ginger hair and a red face. "Pitch black in there, can't see a thing. Give me the dog. If anything's in there, he'll soon bring it out. You'll see." But nothing would persuade the terrier to put its nose to the hole again. More than once they dragged the wretched animal choking to the mouth of the hole and held it there, pushing it from behind. But the dog dug its front feet into the ground obstinately and backed out yelping just as soon as they let go of his collar. Billy held his fire and hoped. "There's something in there. Got to be something in there to make the dog turn tail. He's a useless mutt, Jack. Like I said, you should get yourself a proper dog. Yellow as a buttercup he is. Look, if he's frightened, then he's frightened of something, right? So there's got to be something down there, hasn't there? Now, if he won't go in after it and drag it out, then we got to persuade whatever's in there to come out, haven't we?" "Yeah, but how are we going to do that, Jack?" "I'm coming to that. First, we've got to make sure there isn't another way out of there. We've got to block off any other way out. So you get round the other side of that old route, and if you find another hole, kick it in so he can't get out. And then we got him trapped, see?" Billy listened to the scrambling feet clambering about outside. "Nothing here," came a voice from behind the earth wall at the back of the cave. Under Billy's arm, the fox licked his lips, gathered his tongue in and listened for a moment, and then he began to pant in short, sharp bursts, every so often pausing to listen again. "Hey, I think I can hear something. I can. There's breathing inside there." Billy clasped his hand over the fox's snout to close it and stroked his ears gently to calm him down. "There's something in there, Jack. I heard it, clear as day. I heard it. If there's something inside there, then it won't want to be there for long. Got a little surprise for it, a nice little surprise. Come back here and give me a hand. A few twigs and dry leaves is all we need." And Billy heard them climbing up out of the crater, sending little avalanches of earth and stones tumbling down behind them. A few of them finding their way into the mouth of the cave. When the voices were far enough away, Billy crawled forward to take a look. There was just a chance, he thought, they might be able to escape before the hunters came back. He could not think why they had gone off to gather twigs and leaves, but whatever it was, he did not want to be trapped in that cave when the hunters came back again. When he was sure it was all clear, he pushed a fox out in front of him and prepared to follow him out. But the fox seemed reluctant to go and struggled to turn round. As Billy pushed him out again, there was a hideous growl and suddenly the terrier was there in front of them, stocky on its four little legs, its lips curled back over its teeth and snapped out its machine gun rattle of a bark. The fox did not hesitate. He was back through the hole and at the back of the cave before Billy could hurl the stone he still held in his hand. He missed, but it was enough to persuade the terrier to retreat again while he gathered some more ammunition. And then the hunters were coming back, slithering down the slope and laughing as they came. "All talk, that dog of yours, Jack, all mouth ears. This'll do the trick, you'll see. Just put it down by the hole there, that's it, nice pile. Only the dry stuff, mind you. Don't want anything wet. Now give us that bit of cord you got holding your trousers up." "But they'll fall down. Don't matter about that. Who's to see? Come on, give it here. Plenty more of it back at the farm. Can't get a fire lit without it, can we? And it's got to be a good fire. Then we put the leaves on it and push it down that hole, and whatever's in there will either be smoked like a kipper or come running out. And when it comes out, which it will, we'll be waiting for it, won't we, to blast it to kingdom come." Billy heard a match strike. And then the twigs began to crackle, and then he could smell the smoke, and the fox wanted to run and began to struggle, but Billy held on tight. He thought of kicking out the back of the cave, but knew it was pointless even to begin. There was no time. The game was up, and Billy knew it. He was about to call out and surrender when he heard a different voice outside, the quiet voice of an older man that demanded and was used to instant obedience. "Put that fire out before you set the whole wood alight, you idiots. Stamp it out, I tell you, or I'll get ugly, and you wouldn't like me ugly. I don't even like myself when I'm ugly. So just do as you're told and put out that fire." The voice rose to a sharp command. There was much scuffling outside in the crater, and Billy lowered his head to the floor of the cave and could just see their boots stamping out the last of the fire. "Very well, that will do. Over here, the two of you, so you can hear me. I'm not going to say this twice. First, you are trespassing on my land. You know who I am, and you know you are trespassing. Second, you are poaching. Why else would you have your guns and that little rat of a dog? Only came after a rabbit, didn't we, Jack? That's all, Brigadier, honest. You even lie badly. Is it likely you would go to all that trouble, come all the way up here to smoke out a rabbit when there's thousands of them hopping about down in the fields? There's more rabbits this year than there's been for years. It's lucky for you I came when I did, because if you'd have caught what you were after, then you'd have been up before the magistrates Monday morning for poaching. Now this time, and only this time, I'll overlook the trespassing. But if I find you in my woods again, I'll get ugly. Ugly as sin. Now take that horrible little dog and get yourselves out of here before I change my mind. And one more thing before you go. There's been a swan flying around here the last day or so. Seen it myself. Easy things to shoot swans. If you take a pot shot at her, I'll know who it is. Remember? If you see it, you leave it alone. Understand? They're protected. A protected species, swans are. But you're not. So get going before my trigger finger gets twitchy. Billy's hunched shoulders relaxed as he heard the hunters running off down the hill, the terrier yapping as they went. But he could see one pair of boots were still in the crater, and a stick walking with them, and they were coming towards the hole. And there was a sound of sniffing, and the light was blocked out by a face peering in at them. "Can't see you," said the face that sported a neat white moustache, "but I know you're in there. Smell a fox a mile away, I can. Spect you're out of that earth over in Innocence Copse. Saw you when you were little. 6 of you there were, weren't there? Dashed lucky for you I came by. Only came this way to find that swan. Saw it come down in the woods this morning. Funny place for a swan to come down, I thought. And then I spotted the smoke. Came just in time, didn't I? Come September, you'll make fine sport for the hounds. So I'll be seeing you again, my fine foxy friend. I'll be the one on the chestnut mare leading the hunt. First over every fence I am. The master, they call me. Be all in pink so you can't miss me. We'll meet again, you can be sure of that. And don't go getting yourself shot in the meantime, will you? Always a pity to waste a good fox." The boy and the fox waited all day in their earth cave until the daylight at the entrance began to fail. Billy had made up his mind now that it was dangerous to move by day. In future, he would travel only under the cover of darkness and find somewhere to lie up during the day. He waited until dark had fallen outside before clambering out of the hole. They climbed up through the woods and out once again into open countryside beyond. He could see the city glittering far away below him, and knew that if he turned his back on the lights and kept walking, he would be going in the direction he wanted. That night, they put many miles between themselves and the city, for they were able to walk safely enough along the lanes. And on the rare occasions a car did disturb them, they could see its headlights coming and had plenty of time to climb a gate or jump into a ditch. Billy kept the fox on a lead again now, a piece of orange twine he had found by the side of the road. He wanted no repeat of their encounter with the little girl the day before. The fox balked at it more and more as the night went on, and from time to time would sit down obstinately in the middle of the road and refuse to move. It was no use jerking on the string, and Billy knew that. So Billy would sit down beside him on the road and put an arm around him and talk softly in his ear of the place that they were going to and how it would be wild country where there were no people and where they could be together always and where no one would hunt them because no one would even know they were there. "And when we get there," Billy said, "you'll never have to have a lead on you again. Won't be any need for it, will there? And there'll be food enough for both of us. You'll see, I promise you. I'll see to it. Come on now, it's not far. I know you're tired, but after all, you got four legs and I only got two. So you can only be half as tired as I am. On your feet now."